This is an Audio Wool original.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/frightday.
A lot of great banter. Ow. Really? Okay. Don't. Please. Are you good?
I'm good. Right. I'm good. I'm good.
It is Fright Day. I'm your host, Byron. Following a family tragedy, sorrow moves in, grabs hold, and picks at what's left. Can loss lead to new beginnings? Find out tonight as we review Ari Aster's directorial debut, Hereditary, and as the moon wanes, now might be a great time to dust off that old telescope and look very closely for remnants of a civilized past. It's ruins on the moon.
Yeah.
Moon ruins. In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, I'm joined tonight by Kelly.
You know, that's funny because moon ruins
please
sounds like
say,
blue
just
ruin.
Just say hi, please.
Hi.
And Sam.
Hello.
Okay. Sam isn't here today.
How's it going, guys?
We left him at the theater. His jaw was agape from the horror of Hereditary.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, we're already established that he's not here.
Okay.
Don't need to continue the voice.
I really feel like I should represent him, though.
Oh, the whole show?
Yeah, why not?
It seems like a...
I think it's a good idea, too.
Okay. It's not even close, and you spend the most time with it.
I know. I don't do voice as well, though.
Well, you don't,
that's
but you
never
try
been
a lot. It's kind of the problem.
I actually would say that I don't really try to make an accurate voice. I just make a different voice to represent something.
Yeah, I would. Yep. I would agree with you.
Yeah.
So I had a rough day, Kelly.
Yeah, migraines are not fun.
Writhing in bed, blinding headache, almost barfed on myself.
Ugh.
Thank goodness I'm getting rid of that Ouija board.
I'm telling you,
the Ouija days are over. I think I'm sold. I think something's wrong with that one.
Well,
like,
obvious.
Literally noises in the night.
Things, really?
Yes.
You didn't talk to me about that.
Well, I'm trying not to freak you out, but the door and the light bulb were enough.
Yeah, those were terrifying.
I mean, I'm not doing great. Is that a door opening?
Did you just hear that?
I'll crank it up for the audience.
That was real uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't love that.
Definitely.
I didn't bring it here with me.
My daughter's camping out in a tent in our living room, and I'm definitely going to be sleeping in that tent with her when we're done recording
all
tonight.
Right. I didn't bring an evil spirit in here
well,
with us. But I do know who is getting this haunted
yeah,
board.
Yeah, who got it?
Thank you so much, everyone who entered the drawing. Was that real? Come on now. Are you okay? Come on.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I brought the board here, okay?
No, you didn't.
Of course I did. Well.
Oh my God.
And then passing along to Kristen Dixon.
Kristen, I'm sorry. You really should refuse delivery.
Congratulations.
Refuse delivery.
I would love an update once this board has a new home, but... Man, really glad it's not mine anymore.
Ugh. Reminds me, though, when I was a little kid, the Care Bears sent me the Care Bears game in the mail.
Care Bears are spooky to me.
That's
kind of like
getting the Ouija board.
You know, they're always doing that Care Bear stare.
I love it.
But they're using their bellies.
I
you can't
love it.
Stare with your belly.
You can when your belly has rainbows that
yeah,
come
but
out of it.
A face. It implies eyes are necessary.
No, you can stare with a belly rainbow.
I don't buy it for a second.
I love those Care Bears.
I got a story right here in front of me that involves two things that you love.
Ooh.
Space.
I love space.
And Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. Did you hear what the whole premise is?
No, I don't know. And for people who don't know, Ryan Gosling signed on to play Neil Armstrong in the movie First Man.
Yeah. So the whole movie is building up to the fact that when he landed on the moon, he saw spacecraft and he panned around with his camera. The CIA blocked the footage, and that's a lot of the footage that's been lost. But yeah, there were giant, I think two giant alien craft that they thought, and he said, like, they're watching us, they're watching us.
Much like the footage from Apollo 17, which was a Patreon exclusive
episode. Yeah, exactly. Same type of deal. So that's what the whole movie's about.
I did not know that.
It's not about that.
Oh, God, you always lie to me.
I know. I really wish it was about that.
It's not fair.
Especially because it's Gosling, but who knows? Maybe he'll work something like that
in.
It's
just a space drama.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Be an Avenger.
First man to walk on the moon. That'd be something.
We've chosen a job so difficult, requiring so many technological developments. We're gonna have to start from scratch.
No withdrawal.
Only after we master these tasks do we consider trying to land on the moon.
Neil, if his flight is successful, you'll go down in history. What kind of thoughts do you have about that?
We're planning on the flight being successful.
Damn, that is a big mother.
It'll go up like a half kiloton A-bomb if it blows.
The vehicle's not safe.
We need to fail down here so we don't fail up there.
This isn't just another trip, Neil. You're not just going to work.
Do you think you're coming back?
There are risks, but we have every intention of coming back.
Somebody got a Swiss Army knife?
Swiss Army knife? You kidding me?
I mean, it's cool. I'm excited. Gosling's great. It's also has
Kyle
that
Chandler.
Doesn't it also have Punisher in it?
I don't remember.
What's
that
his bucket
guy's name? Also has one of our rising stars, Unsane's Claire Foy.
Oh yeah, Foy.
So that'll be a blast.
Foy.
Not horror, probably, but I mean,
we'll see what direction they take with it. Gosling, make it good.
Please make it good.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people can slide from drama to horror, like the director of Suspiria.
Yeah.
Luca Guadagnino, also the director of Call Me by Your Name.
One of the best movies I've ever seen.
Looking forward to it. Suspiria trailer was unreal. I watched the Halloween trailer. Sam's refusing to watch it.
Right, because he doesn't want to.
Because I only watch trailers.
Yeah, I don't know about that either.
I don't think it ruins it. I think it's amazing. I'm really excited for it. There's some kind of interesting. Don't brush.
Sorry,
please
my
don't.
Nose.
Come on now.
I'm sorry, my nose.
Interesting Laurie moves, but.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, overall, pretty excited for mainstream horror that's coming up. And both of those trailers, of course, are up at FrightDay.com. Check it out. I'm not. Very excited for that new Purge movie that's coming out.
You seem really down on it, but it doesn't seem any different from the other ones to me.
Far less masks.
I don't know. I saw some spooky masks. Yeah, I mean, you have to imagine that the masks came about afterwards.
Of course. Yeah, when it was interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I like political social elements of the Purge films, but I like them with, like I said, spooky masks. I don't know why I like masks.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Maybe it'll be terrible. I don't know. We'll see. Is it supposed to be the last one or are they not saying that?
Well, technically, it's the first one.
Well, I guess that's true. Chronologically.
I don't know what they're doing with the franchise. I think that they were at some point planning on making it a serialized TV show, but they say that a lot with these franchises. So
that makes sense.
I mean, we're talking a lot about things that we're excited to see, but did you see anything this week that you want to talk about?
I did.
Uh-oh.
I saw two things, actually. The first came because I felt like I needed to watch something because I never watch anything these days.
Because you're disappointing.
You know, and I don't like being disappointing. My psychiatrist tells me all the time that I need to work on not caring so much about being seen as doing well. But I do care about being seen as doing well. So yeah. It's like, well, I could probably stay awake for another hour. So I decided to watch an episode of Black Mirror. Everybody's been talking about the new season being
Black
so good.
Mirror, it's your phone. It's a screen without when it's not lit.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Is that
I didn't realize that.
You didn't realize that, huh?
Those Brits are so damn smart.
It's the Black Mirror.
Yeah.
The new season though, right?
New season. Yeah, and there was an episode called Crocodile, and I was like, yeah, that looks pretty good. Oh, Crocodile sounds fun.
All right.
I wonder if it's like
pause.
Anaconda or something. I'll watch this.
Lake Placid.
Yeah, or that.
I was thinking you would
it
probably.
It was.
Okay.
Not for me. Have you seen this episode, Byron?
Oh, I don't watch that show.
Okay.
I wish I had time for it.
So let me just give you a quick rundown.
Please do.
Starts out with a scene in a club somewhere in Europe. Then we've got these two people driving down this really beautiful road that looks like Iceland. It turns out that it was Iceland, according to people on our Facebook page. And it's really beautiful scenery, but they're driving down the road and it's very early morning time. And it's apparent that they've been up all night partying. All of a sudden, they hit a guy on his bike. And they go off to the side of the road after stopping, doing like the classic stop, and like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
I know what you did last summer.
Yes, exactly. The man driving looks down and it's just this really, there's not a lot of blood, but the contorted position of the body is real uncomfortable and it starts moaning.
Oh no. Still kicking.
The girl's like, we have to call somebody. And he's like, no, no, no. And he freaks out about how he's going to go to jail. And they get a sleeping bag out of the car, put the guy in the sleeping bag, drag him up this cliff and throw him off the cliff. Well, then fast forward, I don't know, 15 years or something like that.
And they made a pact. Never.
And this woman, well, it's kind of like that, but that was just kind of the end of it. The woman is now an architect, I believe. And she's got like a 10-year-old son. And she's got a husband. Anyhow, the boyfriend from that night comes back into her life. A series of events transpires, which
culminates.
Yeah, everybody plug your ears if you don't want this spoiled. The second to last scene, Byron.
Uh-huh.
It's a baby's crib.
Bad sign already.
The woman kills a fucking baby. Essentially, her boyfriend comes back and says, I got to tell people, like, this is killing me. So she kills him. And then she becomes part of an investigation into somebody else that was in an accident on that night. And the investigating woman, and it's a bit sci-fi, right? But the investigating woman comes and interviews her and does this little brain scan thing. And in the brain scan thing, she sees what this woman did to her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And the woman tries to get out of her house, but, you know, anti-hero here doesn't let her go and kills her. And then finds out where she lives because she realizes that this woman had sent a message to her husband. So goes to her house and kills her husband to make sure he doesn't tell anyone either. And then on the way out, she hears a baby start crying. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. No, 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 no. And yeah, she kills the baby. And the reason... No.
Oh, then relax.
Oh my God, it was horrible.
I mean, I understand that that's a weird button to put on it. It's one of those gut drops. And we'll talk about gut drops later.
And the reason Bugsy Malone was posted on our page for 5 minutes yesterday is because the last scene of this movie is the woman going and sitting in the audience at her son's production of Bugsy Malone.
Okay.
Crying and realizing she's the worst person ever. Because she is. Yeah, that was the first thing I selected to watch. It was a bad choice. And then today I watched the movie Mune in celebration of Moon Month with my daughter and our neighbors. And it's actually a very cool, artistic, award-winning animation movie from a couple years ago. It has some pretty scary stuff in it. Very folktale oriented about a guardian of the moon and a guardian of the sun.
There's a magma demon?
There's a magma demon. There's the underworld. Adorable little creatures that come out at night. There's a girl who's a candle and her name's Glim.
Cool.
It was actually great.
Well,
that was way better. So
if you have little ones at home and you want to get them involved in Moon June.
Yeah, watch that. Don't watch Crocodile.
And that's a lot of good advice from you. And while you're talking Moon and things that aren't necessarily horror, I'm going to talk about my latest obsession.
Which is?
My non-horror fascinations are very eclectic.
Friday night is fight night.
Only one will survive.
Oh, big shot, major sparks. Look at this. I feel like I'm in the dentist chair. This is insanity.
BattleBots, all new Friday at 8 on Discovery.
Boy.
I love BattleBots. I like robots that fight each other. I'm a huge fan of the robot Tombstone. I think that Tombstone's going to take it all the way.
Whoa.
I've yet to see Megatento, driven by my crush, Lisa Winter.
Really?
I love this show. It's on Discovery. It used to be on ABC, but they
move it. Did they just not
get... Because no one else likes it or enjoys robots fighting each other.
I got it. Okay, fair enough.
But I love it. I think it's the best.
No, that's great. Have you seen Big Hero 6?
Well, that robot, he's too soft.
He's fluffy. Yeah. He's fluffy, but it starts with the whole premise of battle bots. Like, that's the whole...
So if anyone wants to... What are the things where they put names they think are going to win? A bracket?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be kind of fun.
Brackets.
Yeah, we'll do a bracket when the finals start.
I like that idea.
I love robot combat sports.
Yay!
Much more than a human combat sports, even though I do enjoy watching Brock Lesnar punch someone in the face a bunch.
You know what's nice about those situations, though, is that you actually know who's fighting you and you can go face to face with whoever's trying to attack you.
Uh-huh.
There are some situations going on in our world right now where the victims can't even figure out where the attack's coming from.
We move now to a mystery developing in China. A U.S. government employee may have been the victim of a sonic attack, much like the attacks on American diplomats in Cuba.
We talked about this a little while ago. You remember when things were going down in Cuba?
Yeah. It
was they had to send a bunch of people home because brainwaves were getting messed with.
That wasn't too long ago. It was in the HARP episodes.
Yeah. Very scary. Well, it's happening again, and it's happening in China.
One incident, we announced it to the workforce while we slept here last night. We have medical teams that are moving to be on the ground there. We are working to figure out what took place, both in Havana and now in China as well. We've asked the Chinese for their assistance in doing that, and they have committed to honoring their commitments under the Vienna Convention to keep American Foreign Service officers safe.
I'm going to butcher this name, but Guangzhou, China. Again, American diplomats getting really, really sick along with their families, and America's sending people home because they're really, really concerned.
What's happening exactly to these people?
Well, Americans who were evacuated were ones that worked at the American consulate in this southern city, Guangzhou. They're being tested by a State Department medical team, which is exactly what happened before, but a number of individuals were sent to the United States for further testing to correspond with the testing that was done to the victims from Cuba. Apparently, this has been going on for a little while now. If you guys recall, the Cuba situation dates back to 2016, but it got a lot of traction recently because it just got quite a bit worse. This situation is more recent, but I guess I hate to like jump in and sound alarmist. A lot of people are saying that they think it's Russia in both cases.
They're all communists, though.
They are communist countries. Yeah.
The husband and wife were flown out of Tashkent, Uzbekistan's capital, by the State Department for evaluation, according to a source. Their current medical condition is unclear. Two U.S. security sources say Russia may be involved in that incident and in the sonic attacks in Cuba.
The Russians have the means, the motive, and the opportunity.
Foreign policy professor William Liogrand says Russian President Vladimir Putin has been trying to exert his nation's influence abroad.
It seems that this all began just around the same time that President Obama expelled 35 Russian diplomats because of Russia's interference in our election.
Victims of the attacks in Cuba describe hearing a loud, high-pitched sound in unusual places, often in their homes. The Associated Press obtained this recording.
The other idea is this has something to do with recent trade disputes. It could
it's
have
Canada.
Something to do.
It's Canada.
You think it's Canada?
It's Trudeau.
It's not,
as I like to say.
God, I love that man.
Trudeau.
Trudeau.
Trudeau. Trust him.
I trust that man more than any politician except for maybe John Tester.
Seems like a great guy.
John Tester's great.
Not JT, but I'm saying Trudeau.
Oh, Trudeau's great.
Seems
fun. He's a really good human.
America's under attack.
Well, the problem is the places where these attacks have supposedly been felt are also places that a lot of civilians live. Mm. So apartment complexes, who knows what's going on?
These sound weapons, they're vibrating people's brains and giving them air bubbles?
Yeah.
Things like that, right?
Well, they're saying that they're not even sure what the long-term effects are going to be.
Extremely nauseous.
They hear things compared to like cicadas or crickets.
Yeah.
And they're not sure where they're coming from, but there really aren't cicadas around in case somebody's asking that. Right now, there are about 170 diplomats in this city in China, along with all of their family members. So, you know, multiply that by four, probably something like that. A sizable number would be either undergoing or already has undergone testing by the State Department because they think it's actually pretty widespread. In Cuba, there were 24 Americans who got ill. They're thinking that this might be a little bit bigger than the Cuban situation.
Well, stay safe, American diplomats.
And yeah,
we'll have to keep our ear to the ground on this one.
Yeah, just don't go to these places. Come to Montana.
Wait, what was the instruction if you do hear this sound?
Oh, yeah, don't try to find the origin of it. Sam was telling me that, yeah.
Yeah, pretty dull advice.
Go until you don't hear the noises anymore.
Well, speaking of America, Kelly, I forgot to mention
America?
I watched a movie.
What movie?
It's called Red, White, and Blue.
Hi.
New here, right?
That's right.
Nice.
I don't stay over. I don't fall in love.
Hey there.
I don't do friends.
Is everything okay?
Why are you being nice to me? Was that such a hard question?
No. But you might not like the answer.
Take your boyfriend out.
He's not my boyfriend. That Yeti ain't, but I know how these things work.
I was just wondering, can I sleep next to you?
You're not gonna do anything stupid, are you, Frankie?
What are you doing?
Do you ever cut yourself, Erica? It takes away the numbness?
Who did this? Where are they? I got some questions. Didn't you understand what I just said?
I got a question for you, and I know you're gonna tell me the answer. Where's Erica?
Red, White, and Blue.
Yeah, it's a 2010 film directed by Simon Rumley. One of those mumblecore films somehow just slipped through my radar. It's a story of revenge. There's this guy, Nate. He's a reserved war veteran, played by Noah Taylor.
I was just going to ask, okay.
He takes a shining to his struggling female neighbor. After her destructive behavior lands her held captive by an emotionally unstable guitar player of a terrible Austin, Texas band and his pushover friends, things spiral out of control so quickly and in an incredibly brutal way. Nate tracks them down one by one, the people who helped kidnap her, and gets the information he needs any way possible.
Wow.
A very, very surprisingly interesting movie. It's an IFC Midnight release. It screened at South by Southwest, and it's a very South by Southwest Austin, Texas film. There's scenes that are shot outside the Alamo Drafthouse, as well as many bars that would be easily recognizable for any sort of South by Southwest veterans like myself. Before the show, you mentioned Blue Ruin. It feels a lot like that.
So I'll stay away from this one then. Sounds grim.
Yeah, wild and imaginative kills, overwhelming soundtrack in a really good way.
In a good way.
As the score plays over these kind of really violent moments, it separates them in a really interesting way by making this kind of brutality almost beautiful with the music. It's really interesting. I'm not sure if I was having a super tender night, but I was shocked by how emotionally complex the story was while, like I said, being so vicious. Really interesting movie.
Ugh.
I'm also still watching The Handmaid's Tale. That'll make anyone feel really
bad. Is it worse than the first season?
It's miserable. It's a miserable series that I love so much. Moss isn't incredible. The cinematography is just unreal. I love it, and I'm going to miss it so much when this season's over.
Yeah.
Heavy week of watching. I'm excited to talk a lot more about Hereditary later in the show, but we don't need to do that right now.
Yeah.
It's Moon June.
It's Moon June.
Of course.
Moon June, Blue Ruins, Ruins on the Moon.
Excuse me?
Blue Moon. The Moon Ruins.
Okay. Now you're just saying words.
Blue Ruins, Blue Moon, Moon Ruins.
In this week's edition of Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies. I mean,
that makes sense. That's like a triangulation. Oh, the ruins. So many ruins.
You mean scattered rocks on the moon?
Well, no, this is going to get... So last week, if you recall, we talked a lot about going to the moon, what may or may not have happened during missions that may or may not have themselves happened, Apollo 18, 19, and 20. And patrons heard about what may or may not have happened during the factual Apollo 17. Tonight, we're going to talk much more in depth about ruins on the moon and other evidence that might suggest it was inhabited by intelligent life at one point or possibly even now.
Speaking of intelligent life, I just want to get this out of the way.
Uh-oh.
Sam's not here.
What does that have to do with
I'm going
to
do my
life?
Best to sound smart and have your back here.
Are you going to do some weapons authenticity for me? Because I got some...
I'm not going to try.
I got some stuff coming.
I'm not...
Get ready.
I'm not taking...
Let's start with some interesting facts about the moon, Byron. This will make you feel smarter. There are some lunar rocks that have been found to contain processed metals such as brass, uranium-236, neptunium-237. These elements have never... And I repeat, never been found to occur naturally. Uranium-236 is a radioactive nuclear waste, which is found in spent nuclear and reprocessed uranium. More interestingly, neptunium-237 is a radioactive metallic element and a byproduct of nuclear reactors product of plutonium. Okay, so finding those things on the moon is very, very strange. There were some lunar rocks that have been found to contain 10 times more titanium than the titanium-rich rocks that we found on planet Earth. Some uses of titanium, we use them in supersonic jets, deep diving submarines, spacecraft. It's very weird why there would be so much titanium there as well.
They're byproducts of what we make.
Uh-huh.
Why
weird,
they, what are they doing up there?
I don't know. Neither did Nobel Prize winning Dr. Harold Urey. He won the prize for chemistry. He said, and I quote, "I'm terribly puzzled by the rocks astronauts found on the moon and their titanium content. The samples were unimaginable and mind-blowing since researchers could not account for the presence of titanium on the moon." Yeah?
I mean, I don't know his credentials, but I would assume...
You know what I was actually wondering? There's a lecture hall on our local campus here called the Urey Lecture Hall. I wonder if it's named after him.
Yeah, that underground one.
Yeah.
Scary. It's underground a bomb shelter
bases.
As well.
Lots of subtext there. Anyhow.
Sub.
Yeah, sub under... Yeah, oh, nice. Very well, good. Very good. All see? Right. Well, I don't know if you guys remember this from last year's Moon June, but the vast majority of rock brought back from the moon has disappeared. Lots and lots of rock was brought back over the number of missions that supposedly went to the moon.
Yeah, they took a lot of samples.
Almost all of it's gone. Just like the footage of the moon that is almost all gone.
This is why we shouldn't be taking away funding for NASA.
Well, this is why maybe funding was taken away, because they were just ruining historical accuracy for all of mankind. It's pretty crappy, I think.
Wait, you're blaming NASA now.
Do you know what a lot of people call NASA? Never a straight answer.
All right. And you've been watching way too many conspiracy YouTube videos.
I know.
Are we still trying to understand why some people think the Earth is flat?
I mean, I
gave it a night. I watched videos for about 6 hours.
I haven't found any good arguments for it. I really haven't.
No, one of the arguments, though, that they constantly bring up is NASA lied about blank. So why wouldn't they lie about blank?
Right. I mean, and NASA does lie, I have no doubt, but that still doesn't change science, mm-hmm. in my opinion. But
so rocks are gone on Earth.
Rocks are gone. And in 2009, NASA did admit that the original recordings of the first moon landing had been erased, but said that they'd managed to remaster some of the original television broadcast of the landing. Again, we've only got the parts that were broadcast. We don't have the original content. We also, I think something like 40 reels of additional film have completely disappeared.
And we get into that a little bit one more time in Apollo 17.
We do, yeah. And there will be lots of evidence about the weirdness regarding the moon that has to do with stories of the astronauts who had visited there, but that's for another episode. Tonight, there's so much to cover with the ruins alone that we can't get into the astronauts themselves. Bottom line, there's stuff on the moon, guys. I don't know what it is, but we're going to talk a lot about it.
I want you to, if it's out, why don't you look up at that moon and just know that...
Take a gander.
I'm looking at it right now. We're looking at the
reminds
same
reminds me of that
moon,
Feifel song. Somewhere.
Everything doesn't have to do with a cartoon.
There.
I don't understand.
It really does, though. It all comes back to cartoons.
All right.
That Feifel... Oh, man, that song made me cry so much.
Really?
Yeah, that's a crier. Dr. John Brandenburg, who was the deputy manager of the Clementine mission to the moon. And this was part of a joint space project between the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization and NASA. Okay, so he's come out and said some really interesting things. The mission is known to have discovered water at the moon's poles in 1994. But according to Brandenburg, they had another agenda that was not quite on the radar, if you know what I mean.
It's a sub-agenda.
This is supposedly a quote from him. A photo reconnaissance mission, basically to check out if someone was building bases on the moon that we didn't know about. Were they expanding them? Of all the pictures I've seen from the moon that show possible structures, the most impressive is a picture of a miles-wide rectilinear structure. Byron, I'm going to give you a couple seconds to figure out what a rectilinear structure is to explain to us while I finish this quote. This looked unmistakably artificial, and it shouldn't be there. As somebody in the space defense community, I look on any such structure on the moon with great concern, because it isn't ours. There's no way we could have built such a thing. It means someone else is up there.
Well, rectilinear just means relating to a straight line. Building that has straight lines would be my guess.
Some super long structure.
Yeah, and it's unnatural, obviously. Okay. Do we have pictures of these?
No.
Rectilinear?
That picture is one of those that has not come out, but it is, you know, it's an important... It's an important picture to note.
All right.
Even though we're going on Brandenburg's word there.
Cool.
There is another gentleman, however, that we're going to talk about. George Leonard, a NASA scientist and photo analyst. This information comes from a hell of an article on collective evolution. Sam luckily isn't here to just write this off for me, but
should I do it for
we're
him?
No, don't. We're going to have a link to the article in the show notes with this episode at friday.com, of course, but here's a segment of it that talks about George Leonard himself. He's obtained a number of official NASA photographs of the moon, which he published in his book, Somebody Else is on the Moon. Check out this book, guys.
I'm sure we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well.
Yeah. Although the photos are small in size and the resolution is not up to today's standards, they show details of original massive prints. Far more compelling than these photos are his verified NASA credentials and his statements about what was found on the moon. And he's not the only one with a credible background trying to tell the world about the truth of the moon and the photos that were taken from the Apollo missions. We've also got Dr. Norman Begrun, a mechanical engineer who worked for Ames Research Laboratory, National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, and Lockheed Missiles and Space Company, known as Lockheed Martin. Okay? He's accused NASA of, quote, garbling photos the agency doesn't want public to see.
Now, Sam, what's a garble? Shoot, he's not here.
We talked a little bit last week about a specific image where you could see actual structures that were deliberately blurred out. Uh-huh. I mean, it was a bad job.
Kind of disagreed on the...
Keep in mind, though, originally you guys thought that it was just stitching together. Mm-hmm. But then when I showed you the photo and it's like three different objects, it wouldn't make any sense.
Which someone drew a penis on the moon.
Okay, right. That's a good point. I forgot that was your explanation. Yeah,
so
okay.
I don't think we need to retread that.
Yeah, so that's not what it was. It was, you know, definitely things that were blurred out. Dr. Norman Begrun, this mechanical engineer, he has stated that there are a number of large UFOs out there. You can view some of his publications for NASA, where he worked for more than a decade, through this article on collective evolution.
People say that a lot. I worked on this for a decade.
Well, no, but that's when people can produce credentials.
We started Fright Day like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's like half a decade.
40% of a decade.
That's
but
crazy.
Yes, it's really crazy. But that's why when people can actually produce their credentials, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Moon is looking real junky with all the shit that we crashed on it.
Well, and we haven't crashed that much shit there, so I don't know why they hone in on those specific things. It just seems weird to me.
Like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Probably 50 satellites or landers.
Right.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's not that many. Think about the Earth, and if you crash 50 things into the Earth, like...
The moon is not the size of the Earth.
No, but the moon is very large. In fact, Byron, this is a great opportunity for me to bring up with you just how large the moon is and how weird it is that the moon is as large as it is.
Interesting.
The ratio in size between Earth and our moon is matched only by Pluto and its moon, and Pluto's not even considered a planet. But in other words...
All right. Well, you don't need to just rub that in all the time.
I know. I actually love Pluto.
It's still real to me.
My daughter has a shirt that says Team Pluto.
At ByronRocco.com, you can purchase the Discovery of Pluto crop top. It's perfect for the season.
It is. It's a great shirt. The moon is just completely unlike any other moon or satellite object in the universe that we've been able to find so far. In fact, the ratio is so messed up that some people speculate that the moon is actually older than the Earth.
And it just fell into our orbit?
Yes.
All right.
Or some kind of another structure that fell into our orbit. Not necessarily a planet, but like a giant rock collection of, I don't know, I do not have an astronomy degree, clearly. The moon is very large, in other words. So 50 crashed objects on there really isn't a super big deal.
All right, fine. All right.
So we've got George Leonard, pretty damn credible. We've got a couple scientists that discuss some of the moon ruins. We've got a gentleman by the name of David Wilcock. Funny story here, I was going to get you a wiki summary of who he is. Turns out there's actually quite a controversy surrounding the fact that his wiki page was deleted about a year and a half ago, right after he posted a big article about the cabal elite that are running the world. This article, it was actually a series, and he called it Endgame.
I mean, how xenophobic was it?
I didn't read it.
All right.
Yeah, I only care about his moon ruin stuff for this episode. I really don't know. But there is a Wikipedia page about the deletion of his Wikipedia page, and then there's also a great Reddit thread talking about some of the conspiracy theories about why his information was erased. So because I couldn't find a wiki summary for him, here's a quick explanation of his background from his own website. David Wilcock is a professional lecturer, filmmaker, and researcher of ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and new paradigms of matter and energy. His upcoming Hollywood film Convergence unveils the proof that all life on Earth is united in a field of consciousness which affects our minds in fascinating ways. David is also the subject and co-author of the international bestseller The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, which explores the remarkable similarities between David and Edgar, features many of David's most inspiring psychic readings, and reveals documented NASA scientific proof of interplanetary climate change and how it directly impacts our DNA.
The last time you talked about Edgar Cayce had something to do with giants in episode 117?
Yeah, he talks about giants, he talks about Egypt. He was a prophet of some sort, I guess.
All right.
Very interesting character.
But back to David.
I do have to, you know, full disclosure, say that Rational Wiki also has this to say about David. David Wilcock, born 1973, is an American author known for promoting pseudoscience and pretending to his readers his ideas are factual.
And also the reason his wiki was deleted was because he was talking an awful lot about the Pizzagate conspiracy.
Yeah, that's an issue for some.
It's not great.
Yeah. But why are we talking about him tonight? Well, we're talking about him because he talks a lot about moon ruins. There's a pretty cool article on Exopolitics website, which I highly recommend everyone read. And of course, we'll have linked in the show notes of this episode at Friday.com. The title is, Has Extraterrestrial Manipulation Ended, Making Possible 1,000 Years of Human Freedom? Within this article, he talks a lot about the involvement of other civilizations in the development of our civilization. Most specifically, for our topic tonight, he gets into lava tubes in the moon, which could support large cities. The size of the moon's caverns, he says, are large enough to fit a large metropolitan city. And he actually has an illustration showing the size of Philadelphia compared to the hypothetical size of one of these moon tubes.
So do they call it New Philadelphia?
Because it would be, would be fun. Here, Byron, obviously everybody else will be able to see it, but it's very weird looking. It just reminds me of Pauly Shore is immediately what comes to mind.
Okay, so you're referencing Biodome, yeah. The popular 90s film by my mortal enemy, Pauly Shore.
Who likes to bash your windshield.
He didn't bash it. He did crack my windshield last time I was in Los Angeles. And I'm coming back for you, Shore. This ain't over, buddy.
I worry about
it was
you.
Almost a year to this day.
I park in front
of one alternative comedian's home.
Yeah.
I mistake him for one gardener. Let's just say he looks a little haggard.
Well.
I didn't wheeze the juice with him.
No, I'm glad you didn't.
He didn't need to do that.
No. I'm sure some of our listeners will read the rest of that article on the Exopolitics site. There's some interesting fringe-ish stuff there that I'm not going to say that I get behind, but I do think that some of the discussion of the moon ruins is worth getting into. And really, because I've referenced a couple of questionable articles now, I think probably the best thing we can do in order to regain... to regain a lot of credibility about what's being discussed, we're going to hear a story of someone who experienced some of these photos firsthand, and we're going to hear it luckily through the narration of our good old buddy Lacerda.
Greetings all. In 1979, I was a project manager for a privately owned engineering company doing business with the Venezuelan oil industry. My counterpart in Venezuela, our client's chief engineer, an American engineer named Lester House, had come to Houston on business. We hit it off when he arrived, and after a few days, he confided that he had an ulterior motive in coming to Houston. After asking me to keep an open mind, he told me he was both an amateur astronomer and a ufologist and that he wanted my help in obtaining access to secret photos held somewhere inside NASA. I was speechless. When I finished laughing, I realized he was dead serious. Some of the guys at work thought Lay was just a little light in the loafers, and others thought he was just plain crazy, but I could see that he was concerned about what I would think of him. After all, we were professional engineers, and he had taken quite a chance with me. Les showed me a small paperback book entitled Somebody Else is on the Moon, written by a former NASA scientist, George H. Leonard. Leonard had been working in the Photo Intelligence Division of NASA. His job had been to interpret moon pictures taken by the unmanned space probes we were sending there during the early and mid-60s. NASA was mapping the moon, scoping out possible landing sites for the future manned missions. Les lent me the book, and I read it overnight. Leonard had come across photos he felt confirmed the presence of a very ancient and possibly current civilization on the moon. He explained that in 1961, President Kennedy had committed the USA to reaching the moon within a decade, primarily because throughout the 1950s, the scientific community had been rocked by observatories around the world, which began reporting and later confirming that moon craters were actually disappearing, right out from under the watchful eyes of their state-of-the-art telescopes. Since the possible ramifications were obvious, and presumably, since the Roswell incident had already gotten the government's attention, the powers that be had decided that Uncle Sam had to be the first to reach the moon. After arguing futilely with NASA authorities about releasing the photos, Leonard published them himself in his book. The small photos would show little, so he provided hand-drawn sketches to accompany each photo. And he published the special NASA identification code numbers for each picture. When I finished the book, I called Les and said I was intrigued and would help. The very next day, we made the first trip out to NASA and spent the day taking the guided and self-guided tours. On the second day, we made our move. We entered the public orientation building and told the receptionist that we wanted to make arrangement to see some moon pictures. With no clue where to start, she eventually directed us to her supervisor, who was equally at a loss. Apparently, no one charged with dealing with the public knew where NASA kept its photos or whether they kept them at all. We were passed around to at least four other people before someone admitted that NASA had lots of photos somewhere on the complex, but that the public wasn't permitted to view unauthorized photos of any project. That's when we changed our strategy. Les blurted out, "Isn't it true that NASA is a civilian agency funded by taxpayer money?" Confusion spread over her face, and I added, "Well, we're two taxpayers, and we're here to see our pictures. Who's got them?" Before she could recover, we flashed Leonard's book in her face. I continued, "What's so unauthorized about pictures that have already been published?" From then on, we decided to stay on the offensive at all times. Reinforcements were called in, and we soon found ourselves having the same conversation with the big boys from administration. None had seen the book, but significantly, one had taken the time to confirm that Leonard was in fact a former NASA scientist at the Jet Propulsion Lab, from what I could gather. This threw them, and they seemed even curious to learn about the book. We settled for a truce and to return the next day. Before leaving, however, we reiterated that these two taxpayers had every intention of going to the mat with whoever was holding back our photos. To make a very long story short, we spent the next several days filling out enough forms to give a woodpecker a headache. My office advised me that NASA had called to confirm my employment history and to inquire about Les. His hotel advised that someone had called to confirm that he was staying there. Obviously, the wheels were turning. Finally, someone called to say we could see the photos. We returned to NASA thinking we had finally succeeded. But success was not to be so easy. We were directed to a Building 30, which had not been on the tour and which didn't even exist. Building 30A turned out to be empty, so we walked into Building 30B and found ourselves in the middle of a high-security area where an existing mission was being monitored. Realizing that we were somewhere we should not have been, we tried to blend in. Security personnel demanded to know how we had passed the civilian section and what was this about moon pictures, taxpayers, and a book about the moon? We knew we were really in cheap dip when security not only whisked us out of the building but escorted us off the premises altogether. The next day, after some scrambling on both sides, officials apologized to us for the mix-up. We insinuated that at least 1,000 photocopies of the Leonard book could rain down on everyone on the Space Center's mailing list. It was time for NASA to act. After all, we weren't a couple of underwater pipe welders from Boise. We were fellow engineers, brothers of the blood. The photo library, we were told, had been relocated off-site to the Lunar Landing Observatory, directly adjacent to the East NASA property on NASA Road 1. They would be expecting us in 2 more days at 8 a.m. 2 days later, we drove east on NASA 1 past the main entrance of the facility, found a chain-link fence that marked the eastern limit of the property line, expecting to see a building or sign. Nothing but a heavily wooded area. Driving back and forth along the road trying to decide whether they had done it to us again, we noticed a narrow dirt road running back into the woods directly along NASA's fence line. Hung on the chain between two small posts was a sign that read simply, "No trespassing." Instinct told us this had to be the place. Directly behind the trees and camouflaged by the woods was our building. There was no number, only a small plaque near the door that read Lunar Landing Observatory in half-inch high letters. Somehow we weren't surprised. Upon entering, we found ourselves in a small alcove. When we told the receptionist we wanted the library, she pointed toward the broom closet, which as it turned out, opened onto a winding stairway leading down into a dimly lit underground tunnel. I'm certain it took us back toward the NASA property line. At the end of the tunnel was a large room where we found ourselves standing in front of a wall-to-wall counter separating us from the librarian, who was sitting on a stool. He explained that there were at least 2 million photos in the library, everything NASA had ever photographed since year one. Unfortunately, no one could see random photos, as time was always short and filing systems complicated. To see any picture, you need its specific code number. Roger was surprised that we had all the numbers, no one had told him about the book. We handed him our list, but after a quick glance, he gave us the bad news, the numbers were meaningless in Houston. He explained that for security reasons, NASA had split the country into 5 regions, each with a duplicate set of records and a different code number system. Leonard's numbers weren't applicable in this facility. I asked where the master list was kept, and Roger replied at Langley, Virginia. Les and I looked at each other. We didn't have to say it, but we suspected who that meant. We huddled in the corner for a few minutes trying to decide whether this was another stalling effort. But we had come too far to give up. We informed Roger that we wanted to proceed. He said that someone in the NASA complex had the proper forms to start the ball rolling. He just wasn't sure who, since no one had ever requested the photos before. We were the first, he said, at least in Houston. A few days later, Roger called us to come fill out new forms, though there wasn't much they didn't already know about us. Roger announced that the photos were ready for our inspection. There were, however, strict rules. We were to get 3 8-hour business days. We were not allowed pens, pencils, paper, calculator, camera, or recording devices of any kind. Nor could we be left alone with the photos. We were allowed only the book and a magnifying loop. We would be escorted in and out for lunch and bathroom breaks. If we agreed to these terms, he said, we could begin at 9 o'clock the next morning. We arrived at 8. This time, we were escorted in by 2 men. We found 5 extra-long conference room tables set up in a U-shape. We had expected to find only the pictures listed in Leonard's book. To our amazement, there were thousands of photos, all in sets of numerical order, approximately 32 by 24 inches, with a dull gray, almost dull black look. On the back of each, technical information was recorded, such as the probe's height above the moon's surface while it was taking the picture, the angle of approach, and the location of the sun in relation to the capsule. Frustratingly, we had all the technical data for triangulation. Simple trigonometry and algebra were all that we needed to compute the size and distance of anything shown. But without paper, calculators, or pencils, we were limited to what we could do in our heads, and we weren't up to it. The numbers were too big, the angles too acute. We had to rely on Leonard's numbers. But we verified everything that he had seen. To this day, I can remember these views, a boulder that seemed to have been rolled uphill, leaving its tracks in the side of the hill, obvious machinery on the surface, showing bolted sections, 3 dilapidated bridges crossing a chasm that reminded me of the Grand Canyon, pipe fittings that looked like 4-way T's, some with their ends turned up or down as they hung over the edge of a crater, 3 surprising pyramids that prompted me later to closely study the Egyptian Giza pyramid complex, apparent pipelines crisscrossing the surface, running to and from craters, a UFO rising from the surface and photographed directly above a crater, and perhaps the most memorable, the unmistakable figure of a rectangular structure, placed squarely in the biggest crater pictured. The structure looked either very old, or under construction, but the crater had to be miles wide, and the camera angle gave a perfect 3-dimensional view. Nobody said much at all for 3 days. Lester was in hog heaven, having realized his greatest ambition.
And I was hooked on UFOs.
So I'm not playing all of that.
No, but hopefully you played most of it, because
it's
really important. Not only is it a cool story to hear what these people saw firsthand in these crazy photos, but I also think it's interesting and important for our listeners to hear the process they went through in order to be able to view those photos. If you live in any of the areas close to the locations of any of the remaining moon photos that are stored, I would really encourage you to go out there and see what you can do. Obviously, this was in the 70s. It could be infinitely more difficult, nigh impossible to do it these days, but I think it's worth a whirl. There is not a library of moon photos anywhere near our home in Montana.
No.
I'm going to need to rely on our co-captains out there. Somebody go get some photos.
Do you think there's ex-NASA employees that just have some of the pictures?
Well, that's where a lot of these, you know, firsthand accounts have come from. People that say, yeah, there's crazy stuff in these photos. I doctored photos. This is what I did. I can't say that the reason the photos are being doctored slash hidden is because they're ruins, but I've read enough people saying that that's what they've seen in these original photos that I'm not going to call them liars. The one bit of evidence that I'm going to leave you with tonight that we're going to dive into more when we talk about the astronauts is this notion that Armstrong supposedly reported seeing things on the moon himself when they landed, specifically says that there were ships watching them when they first landed on the moon. And I do wish that that's what Gosling would get into.
Okay, it's not.
I'm not hopeful.
You know, a role I wish Gosling could get into?
What?
Crazy Stupid Love 2.
I actually do too.
It's a pretty good movie.
I love that movie. I want everybody to check out this photo and see if they agree with Sam and Byron that it's merely the result of stitching. It's obviously not.
Obviously is. And if Sam was here, he would agree with me.
I think you guys need to take a peek at it. It's one of my favorite photos to really look
Kelly,
at.
That's so sad.
No, it really is. You look at this photo and you go, okay, there has to be something. There has to be something.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, like, look at that.
All right. Quit looking at
it. Look at that.
You gotta stop looking at it so much.
Look at that.
Kelly, thank you so much for that report.
Oh my gosh, you're so welcome.
Ruins on the moon.
If you didn't get the whole Lacerda story, depending on what Byron leaves in.
You did not.
Be sure to go to the link and listen to the whole story.
Sure.
It's great. Also, for clarification, it actually isn't Lacerda's story. She's just narrating it. It's the story of UFO investigators. So,
all right.
Let's talk about a really happy movie, guys.
It's what you call a summer feel good.
Yeah.
It's time to talk Hereditary.
Hope you're enjoying your visit here this evening. Now, on with the show.
Hereditary. It's a 2018 horror film directed by Ari Aster. Kelly.
Yeah.
You think you could tell me a little bit about this movie?
When Ellen passes away, her daughter's family begins to unravel cryptic and increasingly terrifying secrets about their ancestry. The more they discover, the more they find themselves trying to outrun the sinister fate they seem to have inherited.
Hereditary.
Yep.
On the horizon for a long time. I actually saw the second screening ever of it at South by Southwest. I heard a really excellent Q&A moderated by Elijah Wood with Ari Aster, Alex Wolf, and Millie Shapiro, which is available to Patreon patrons at patreon.com/Friday.
Okay, so I want to hear what the kids were like during the Q&A.
Incredible.
Really?
They were very excited about a lot of things, but I should tell you right now, and I'm going to say this a couple times, the Q&A includes a lot of spoilers and there's absolutely no way for us to communicate anything about this film without spoilers.
Yeah. So just stop and go watch it.
What are you doing?
If you
listening?
Haven't watched it, stop listening.
Quit listening
stop
right
listening.
Now because that's
go
insane.
Away. Go away.
Hereditary
go
is
away.
Not what you think it is.
No, it's not. Well, actually, it's some things they think it is. I think everybody at this point knows that it's a Kelly trigger.
Well, that's because you guys aggressively talk about it in our Facebook group, facebook.com/Friday.
Yeah.
I guess it was Sun. Was it?
Was it Sundance?
It might have been Sundance. Supposed to be the scariest movie of the year, everybody's saying.
And then the trailer dropped, and it was the scariest trailer since Goodnight Mommy, everyone said.
Yeah.
And I know a handful of people who have kind of hopped on board with this I don't watch trailers anymore trend.
Sam.
It's a choo-choo of people who, run media websites like myself.
Yeah, I like the trailers.
I do too, but Kelly, this trailer, everyone was worried it was somehow spoiling the plot of Hereditary.
Don't worry about that.
Absolutely not. The trailer does an amazing job of, I guess, giving you some of the chills out of context and in a way that really, I guess, made everyone want to go see it.
Yeah.
I don't know if everyone left stoked that they did that.
No.
There's a whole subsection of horror fans, I'm sure, are like, all I wanted was something scary. I didn't want to feel bad.
Yeah.
One more time, if you're listening to this, shouldn't. Go watch the movie.
Yeah.
It's in theaters.
Ugh.
Did we give him enough time?
Yeah, I think so. So Toni Collette is an artist.
She does these miniatures.
Her name is Annie, and she does these miniatures, and they're very incredible, but they're very creepy just from the outset of the movie.
Well, like, I guess she likes to put her personal experiences into her work, and that's probably why she's so successful. But when things start going wrong, it's kind of increasingly disturbing.
Well, but I just think it's creepy to begin with.
You don't like miniatures?
Miniatures scare me.
All right, I get it.
Miniatures frighten me.
You didn't have a dollhouse?
No, I did.
Okay, what'd you put in it?
Multiples. Miniatures.
So Steve Numo is the artist. He's from Toronto.
He's the one that did all of them?
Yeah, and he's actually the same guy who worked on the puppets for Team America, World Police.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. That's a
reference to something that we may have cut from the show earlier.
Right. Apparently I was being racist. I thought I was just quoting Team America, but I guess that would make sense that is kind of racist.
Probably. There's a good chance.
So she's doing all of these amazing miniatures and, in fact, is constructing some around the hospice care of her mother before her mother died. A little bit like, meh. Okay, weird. I don't know that I'd do that.
We all process loss different ways.
We know immediately the family is functioning dysfunctional.
Sure.
The son seems to be like a junior or a senior in high school, very distant and removed, doesn't really talk a lot, especially to his mother.
Sending funny texts about getting lit and blowing clouds in the air. Ripping.
Yeah, he really likes the marijuana.
Well, but they're just kids being kids.
Right, which is fine. And then we've got Charlie, the daughter, who is like a freshman in high school maybe.
Uh-huh.
She's
struggling with something.
Really strange. She's a very strange girl. She really likes a giant orange sweatshirt a lot. Misses her grandmother dearly. We find out early on that the grandma was probably a bit of a biznatch.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get along with people, had some weird relationship with her daughter.
And Charlie and Ellen had an even stranger relationship, it seems.
Yes. There's actually a point in the movie where it's revealed through one of the miniatures that the grandmother, Ellen, was the one who breastfed Charlie, forced her way into doing that.
Toni Collette brought that up in a scene as well.
Yes, yeah, so awkward.
I guess it all makes sense when it comes down to
it. Right, when it comes down to it. But Toni, her performance in this, as I'm sure you've already heard, is unbelievably amazing.
Everyone's seeing Oscars.
She has to get an Oscar for this. It'll be really interesting to see if the Oscars just blacklist this because it's horror.
I don't see how you could.
Short of doing that, I mean, it's her performance is unreal.
She was in The Sixth Sense.
Was she?
Yeah.
Interesting.
She was Lynn Sear.
Another thing that happens early on in the movie is we see Toni Collette open up a box of some of her mother's things. And there's a book indicates pretty immediately that her mom was involved in some sort of
spiritual,
possibly Wicca, possibly witchcraft, possibly, we're not really sure, but certainly some non-traditional spirituality practices. Mm-hmm. Okay. She sees her mom standing in the corner of her studio. God.
This is going to be the beginning of a conversation that I wish I could have with everyone at the same time about the nuances of the corner stand jump scare.
Corner stand or hang.
Creepy crawlies.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people, I respect everyone. I do. They compare this to things like James Wan movies, like Insidious jump scares. And I think that while the scares are similar, this is done in such a way that is like, it's not the same.
The way it's done is very interesting. I will say the only place I've seen this same tactic used effectively, though then they overdid it, was in Lights Out. You can see kind of in the dark and you're like, is there something there or is there not something there?
The opening scene of Lights Out, which I think might have been the best part of the entire movie.
Yeah. I mean, they do a really good job of messing with your brain and then not overdoing it. Even the way that those jump scare scenes resolve isn't the escalating, oh my gosh, now it's rah! The resolution is a much more subtle resolution than you'll see in a lot of mainstream movies.
In the genre, the jump scare is almost like being on like a Haunted Mansion style track through a haunted house, you know?
Right.
They're not restrained in how they do it for the most part.
They'll
have something jump at you, and then something will be behind you, and then try to attack you from many different angles. This, the intention's a little bit different.
But
it's just me. I've been pretty... my opinion about this film is very strong, so I'm trying really hard to not be grating when anyone has criticism about
it. So Charlie is in class and seeing this light. You hear about orbs and ghosts. It's kind of a version of that. She has this tongue clucking noise that she makes. Right. Charlie likes to make this noise. It's kind of her trademark, her socially awkward trademark.
They don't explicitly go into it, but I think she has some sort of anxiety disorder.
She could be on the spectrum. She was a very interesting girl and obviously had a lot of resentment for her mother and a lot of love for her grandmother. And at school one day, she sees this light go out the window. She follows the light, and there's a bird that had hit the window in the middle of her class, and she goes during recess or lunch break or whatever. And cuts the head off the bird and takes the head of the bird with her.
All right.
And she sees her grandmother standing across the street gesturing at her. She seems to know that her grandmother's dead, but it doesn't seem to frighten her that her grandma's standing there.
And there's lots of moments like this. These kind of almost homages to 70s cinema, you know, like Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
It did remind me of a movie. Oh, it was reminding me of The Omen.
I could see
that. There were places
a lot
where it reminded me of The Omen. Yeah. And even Carrie a little bit. Like, it started to feel like it was going in a Carrie direction with Charlie.
Interesting, though. She uses this head to make these little dolls, right?
Yeah, she's making all these weird structures.
It's interesting. The way Ari kind of shows us everything without telling us anything. It's really great. It's just a sign of a great script. Yeah. You know, a lot of details about each of these family members without having to go into it too much.
Yep.
But
very true.
I got a press release one morning for Charlie's Etsy store, and they sold 6 or 7 of her toys, but I like saw it and didn't click on it. I could have owned one of these pieces.
Oh, Byron.
I know. Heartbroken.
How much did they sell for?
Like $8.
Are you f***ing kidding me?
Yeah, I'm serious. It was such a disappointment. I should have jumped up. I can't read all these emails.
I know,
emails.
It's true. You get too many
so
emails.
We get so many emails.
It's really true.
But my heart was broken. And so was Toni Collette's and Peter's. And we haven't talked about that great dad.
He is a good dad. Gabriel
Steve.
Byrne.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
I think he's probably the best member of the family. Toni, we don't really get a clear idea of who she was before this tragedy, the loss of her mother. But we get some of the clues when she goes to these grief counseling meetings.
Yeah. And it's sad. So she meets this woman at a grief counseling meeting. Nope. Backing it up.
Sure.
I suppose we need to tell what happens.
Okay.
So Charlie
and this
Peter.
Is one more time. I'm going to say.
Yeah.
If you're still listening and you haven't seen this movie.
Go away.
Please go. Just go watch it, because this was one of the hardest decisions I've had to make all year, Kelly, to not warn you about this, because I think that if I did, it would have been a less impactful moment.
Well, of course it would have been. I mean, I might be sleeping now too, but
it shouldn't be. It's,
okay.
It's good.
Charlie is obviously not a super social kid. Peter's going to some big party.
Because he wants to smoke weed and hit on this girl.
Who turns out, I guess, is a total brat. I thought she might be cool, and then she sucked. Anyhow, at the last minute, his mom's, well, you're taking Charlie with you, aren't you? Obviously, Charlie has no desire to go.
No.
Like, this is not a kid who's going to enjoy going and standing in this social situation, but the mom makes her go.
It's not a great move on Annie's part to
do
this.
No, it isn't.
It's kind of selfish.
It is. They find themselves at this party. He wants to go smoke a bowl with the hot chick.
Mm-hmm.
He asks Charlie to stay out and eat some chocolate cake because it's apparent at this point that Charlie likes her chocolate.
She's a big fan of sweets.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Okay, and that is...
We watch her eating this, and we suddenly, as an audience, remember that during her grandmother's funeral, her father had great concern for whether the chocolate she was eating had nuts in it because they didn't have their EpiPen. Clearly, she has an allergy.
This was an interesting moment
for me because I have an anaphylactic peanut allergy.
Does that mean your kids do as well?
They actually don't. We've tested it with both of them, and they're both totally fine. Cool. Yeah. Reese's will be a part of their lives. Yay for them.
How do you feel about that?
I'm very happy that they'll be able to. They're both going to be tall, and I never got to be tall. They're both going to get Reese's, and I never got to get Reese's. You always want your children to have a better life than you, and we're off to a good start there.
Stop doing what you're doing to them with all this conspiracy stuff.
No, it's great. That's the best part of their lives. So we watch as she bites into this cake, and there are nuts in it, and her throat starts to seal.
There's this aggressive nut chopping scene that I thought was so good.
And so it's funny, I totally missed that. I thought something was going to happen with the knife.
It's almost like grotesque the way this girl
is chopping. But
that's why
I'm like, it's a knife. Something's going to happen with that knife. And it totally didn't hit me that it was the nuts.
Well, I mean, this is my second viewing, and there's I should say, if you're listening right now, go watch the movie. But also, if you have seen the movie, go see it again. Because it's so fun for you as someone who's aware of the ending to pick up on all the clues as it unravels.
Yeah.
Nuts, cake.
And this is what led me to believe that perhaps she was on the spectrum or something, because she didn't seem to even understand what was going on, just that like her throat was getting bigger and she wasn't able to breathe. You know, she finally goes into the room that her brother's in smoking weed.
Says, we gotta go.
And he freaks out, obviously, grabs her, hauls her to the car, and he's racing her to get her to the emergency room as fast as possible. And it's this horrible scene.
This is the one that sticks with me.
Oh my God, she can't breathe, and she's like clawing at her throat trying to get air.
Well, it's the moment she gets quiet is where it gets really intense. Like, because she's wheezing and there's a lot of panic, but then all of a sudden,
there's no noise. Yeah. I've run into some really scary situations with my peanut allergy.
Can you eat circus peanuts?
Like the gummy ones?
It's a candy from...
I mean, I think they've got peanut something in there. I've never tried to. So. It really does kind of remind me of this experience I had in Nicaragua where I ate peanuts in pesto. They had made the pesto
with pine nuts.
Yeah, because they didn't have pine nuts. And at the immediate moment that I bite into it and realize what it is, we're in this beach town in Nicaragua. All the lights in the whole town go out.
Oh, no.
And
then red lights turn on and then you can't talk. Oh, you haven't seen A Quiet Place.
No, but there's a cabin that we're staying in that's like on the top of this hill. And I'm literally clawing in the dirt trying to get to the top of this hill where our cabin is to get my medicine so I can get my throat to open up. So obviously it never got nearly as bad as it did for poor Charlie. But as I'm watching that, like that's what's in the back of my head. So it was really freaky. She sticks her head out. She's trying to breathe. And you can see the brother is freaking out and he's driving. And suddenly there's something in the road.
Did we even know what that is? I didn't pick that up. It seemed like roadkill, maybe.
Yeah, I bet.
I'd like to watch it a third time, honestly.
You know what's interesting is, now that I think about it, I almost wonder if it was like grandma's body or something like that.
I think that would be a little bit more obvious. I think we'd remember that.
I mean, like laying on the ground, though, just like a body.
Are you Googling that?
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. And as you do that, I'll, I guess, talk through the horrendous thing that happens next. Peter swerves the car. Charlie's head is outside, and we do see this kind of lone telephone pole that's outside Salt Lake, which is kind of a beautiful area to be making a film. Not a lot of people get to see that. Charlie's head hits the pole. One of the most horrific noises I've experienced. It's followed by this really impactful scene that I think is probably one of my favorites. I'm trying really hard not to say this is one of the best horror films of all time, but
it really is.
Alex Wolff's performance in this moment, the camera is on his face, and the way he processes what happened and what he's going to do, you're there with him. You're watching his face change in really subtle ways. The first time I saw it at South by Southwest, you should have heard the audience. It was this kind of like collective exhale.
I just thought it was really interesting because you got so much out of that moment watching him. Like you could watch him process not only the horror of what had just happened to his sister, but also what that meant for his really horrific relationship with his mother.
Yeah.
Like without a single word, really with nothing more than very subtle facial movements. Oh my God. It was like 10 pages of dialogue in one silent scene.
And
it was crazy.
And it doesn't end for that.
No.
What he does is he drives home without even looking in the back seat. And someone mentioned, I didn't pick this up necessarily. You see him like almost open his mouth to say, are you okay to her?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't pick that up.
I think he actually says like, are you? And then, like stops.
It's just so fucked, man.
Yeah.
He drives home slowly, parks the car, goes upstairs, gets into bed, and then just lays there, which is this really bizarre reaction. Like, as teenagers, we've all done something that we're like, my parents are going to kill me. And yeah, you lay there and like you wait that. To hear them wake up in the morning. Have you ever done that?
Yep. Like, oh,
it's
yeah,
one
yeah,
of
yeah.
the most horrific feelings. But this, what he did, and it was an accident.
Right.
It's unexplainable. And that, to me, we haven't even talked about the true horror of this movie. That was more horrific than the third act of this, to me.
I agree, because that just felt much more real. Now, for people who were paying really, really, really close attention, when Charlie Ooh. And Peter are on their way to the party, they drive by this telephone pole that has this very strange symbol on it.
In my Q&A with Ari, he mentioned that the Sundance cut of it, that was a lot quicker, but the studio wanted more people to see these kind of building symbols.
Oh, okay.
He said he would have been happier if one person in the audience caught it.
Right.
Which I kind of agree with him.
But. It was really cool just seeing that. So you knew something was coming. Anyhow, I think... God, it's so hard because I really don't know how much we want to talk about from this point forward.
I'm with you. I just didn't think we could talk about this movie without talking about
right. So that Charlie's was why stuff. It was horrific for me. Even worse, maybe, is that this happens in what, the first 30 minutes of the movie?
Yeah, it's a film that we expect to, I guess, follow her.
I'm like, oh, great.
And it's a 2-hour, 7-minute film.
Yeah. And somebody had said something about, well, there's one scene that'll really bother Kelly. No, because that one scene is what the rest it's of the movie is about.
The whole movie is this family trying to exist in a grief-filled situation.
Ugh, it's a nightmare.
It really is. Because in horror films, awful things happen all the time, but we don't get to see what happened after. You
the
know?
Human fallout with like, it is, yeah.
Teen slashers where these monsters gut people with drills and things like that. You don't get to sit with the mom.
Right.
You know?
Afterwards.
You don't.
Yeah, this was amazing.
And this movie does... change.
It changes. Yeah, and it goes in a really interesting direction. There are parts that I love about the rest of the movie. I'm still trying to digest a couple things to decide what I think about them. Mm-hmm. But unquestionably, it's one of a kind. It is compelling. The acting is disgustingly good.
It's offensively good for a first feature by Ari
Aster. Oh, it's gross. Yeah, well, I mean, it's sad for him because anytime anybody makes a movie like this, the first thing out of the gate, it's just, they're kind of doomed. No offense, Ari.
I want to talk a little bit about Ari real quick. Much like Trey Edward Schultz, the guy whose second feature was also an A24 release. It was It Comes at Night.
Yeah.
Ari's first short caused a bit of a stir. It was called The Strange Thing About the Johnsons. It came out in 2011. Oh, no. Is that a ghost? I'll read the plot, and I kind of want to get your opinion on this. A 12-year-old boy named Isaiah Johnson is masturbating when he is interrupted by his father, an acclaimed poet named Sidney, who apologizes and reassures him that the act is completely natural and to be expected. After he leaves, it's revealed that Isaiah is actually masturbating to a photograph of Sidney, who is his father. Years later, at Isaiah's wedding, his mother, Joan, sees Isaiah about to perform fellatio on a distressed-looking Sidney. Kind of bizarre short film.
Man, I would hate to know what this guy's family was like between that and Hereditary.
Yeah, it caused a lot of controversy because the characters were also African-American and he's a white filmmaker. But he says that, quote, the color of the family isn't important. We certainly assumed that casting black actors in a film that tackles such transgressive themes would create something of a stir. It would be a lie to say that we weren't hesitant. It's kind of interesting. He's one of those true art house guys. And for it to translate into something that I think a lot of people went to see on opening weekend, a lot of normies.
So weird.
I'm extremely curious to know what people think, but much like The Witch, if someone says this movie's boring, I'm going to have words with them, I think.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the traditional horror action doesn't happen until the third act, but what's going on the rest of the movie, and I guess... For me, I can't imagine not feeling horrifically uncomfortable and horrified the rest of the movie. It just shifts in terms of how it's impacting you over the course of the movie, but I think it was really strong.
You mentioned you can't imagine what Ari's home life was like. He did base Hereditary a little bit on his family. That he experienced a couple rough years with his family and that they felt, quote, cursed. So that was almost like the birth of what Hereditary is. Mm.
So. Did he... decapitate his sister?
He did. It's surprising that he was able to make this film.
Very interesting.
And he also went on to say that the miniatures were a metaphor for the family's lack of agency, that they were just dolls in a dollhouse. I mean, that could correspond a lot with our free will episode. You know, what was going to happen at the end of this film was always going to happen.
Right.
So it's pretty brutal.
You know who we haven't heard talk about it?
Sam, what did you think?
Hey, guys. Sam here, recording from an undisclosed location. Hissing in the background, if you can hear it, is my gas lantern. So I apologize for the distraction. Hereditary was not easy. The first half, two-thirds maybe, of the movie were a brutal Oscar drama family tragedy that, when combined with the score, just really scraped out my insides and left me not in a good place at all. When the horror kicked in the third act, it really kicked in with a vengeance. I don't know how to best put it into something that makes sense to me, but it was like an elevated Blumhouse supernatural horror film mixed with a really strong dose of Lucio Fulci. And I mean all of that in a really good way. It was funny, like grim, gruesome horror isn't usually something that lightens the tone of a movie, but it was absolutely a palate cleanser after we got to witness just the absolute hot coals this family was raked over for much of the movie. Really dark, very black. And then in the end, just like I said, really fun dive into horror tropes with a satisfying ending that I don't think was maybe as elevated as the family drama portions were, but that's okay because it wasn't supposed to be. I really love this movie, and I can't think of any labels to give my rating because I'm still so hollowed out by this film, but I'm going to give it an 8.5. Everyone should see this movie if you like horror, I guess, or, you know, like sad, terrible things, which makes you a bad person. I guess I'm a bad person.
Couldn't have said it better myself, Sam, but I'm going to try my best. In my final thoughts, it was extremely special to witness this with the audience that I did, and I was extremely nervous to bring this to the table. It is more than a horror film. We've referenced, we need to talk about Kevin several times in the past few weeks. It makes that look a lot more palatable.
Oh my God.
If you don't mind, I'll read a little bit from my review that I wrote the night I saw it at South by Southwest. In a world full of Wanra, you know, James Wan-esque haunting monotony, this is something honestly shocking, yet commandingly controlled. Heavy, but its burden is shared equally by the entire cast. Mm. Director Ari Aster's feature debut does X a number of profound terror boxes, and does so in calligraphy.
I like it, B. That's very good.
My guts dropped. Didn't breathe for a long time. Didn't feel good. Don't watch this if you don't like feeling bad a lot. But that is what I look for in a film. This is the kind of horror film that I'm always hunting for. Something that accurately represents the devastation of tragedy. Ari Aster nailed it. And for that, I'm giving it 9.2 engulfed loved ones.
Ooh. Well, that... Wow. Okay. I don't know that there's anything I can say that the guys haven't already said, except that for a movie to contain something that I try so desperately to avoid, and then for me to still feel like it was worth seeing, it was pretty damn good, guys. I am hoping that this movie gets the credit it deserves in terms of accolades with the wider cinema community, but I can tell already that the response it's getting within the horror community is hopefully going to yield more work from Mr. Aster. Although I'm not sure I want to see a full length of his short. I would rather him stick to this kind of stuff.
And we all have our preferences.
I give Hereditary 9.6 peculiar purple Paimons from Porcupine Peak.
I don't understand that, but that is our thoughts on Hereditary. For the last time tonight, go support this movie. I don't... A24... God damn, they're good.
Yeah, everything they do seems to be gold.
But of course, I want to know what you think unless you disagree with me. If you do, keep it to yourself.
Just don't,
Let's have a conversation in the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/FrightDay. Leave a comment below this episode in the show notes at FrightDay.com, at FrightDay on Twitter as well. Kelly, we got to get you the password to that. You have no access.
None. That's fine, though.
Instagram at Fright Day as well. Maybe Sam will give us a clue to where he is. What's he doing right now? He's out in the woods.
He's writing. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's exciting. For folks who do want to read what he's written so far, you can check that out at patreon.com/FrightDay. One of the best ways to support us.
Yeah.
Other things that are available there, he got shows like Captain Kelly's Cryptids and Conspiracies, Byron's Serial Corner, The Writer's Room, Cinema Autopsy,
yeah.
Which you guys voted again. Guess what we're doing this next Cinema Autopsy? Mm. We're doing Scream. Mm. One of my favorites. It's going to be a blast.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sigh so much.
That wasn't a sigh. That was a grunt.
I don't know the difference.
That's okay.
Lots of things at patreon.com/FrightDay. One of the best ways that you can support us. Another way you can do that, shop.frightday.com. Pick up a t-shirt. Pick up a string board starter kit. We got pins for you. Join the Boo Crew. Join the KCC Academy.
All of them.
Not many patches left, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, only a handful.
Boy, guys.
If you really want to join the Academy.
Gotta make sure that I have one for Creech and Puck.
But of course, more important than all of that would be if you left a review for us on iTunes. And iTunes is making it a lot easier than they have in the past. You're listening to this podcast on your phone right now, most likely. Statistics show. I've been watching you. All you need to do is scroll down, click write a review, give us some stars, and say some nice words.
Yeah, always.
Not sure what we're doing next week. Our schedules are shifting a bit. I'm still going on a vacation, Kelly. I'm going to camp in Willow Creek. Did I tell you this yet?
Yeah, I'm still worried about you doing that.
I'm going to talk to a couple locals, too, and you guys might just hear that.
Okay.
Pretty soon. Lots of exciting things in the future. Kelly, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me at Kelly Fright Day on Twitter, or you can email me, kelly@frightday.com.
And you want to do Sam's for me? You don't have to do a voice, please.
I'm trying to think. Sam, you can email him, sam@frightday.com. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram.
Well, his Twitter is at Sam Fright Day, and his Instagram is sam_MiloDragovic.
See, you got it.
And I'm at Byron McCoy on Twitter, Instagram, and byron@frightday.com is my email address. Thank you guys so much for listening. We all miss Sam.
Yeah.
Sorry he didn't have the weapons reports, but undisclosed location.
Right.
Writing.
There you go.
And until next Fright Day, I'm Byron.
I'm Kelly. Sam's not here.
Been listening to an Audio Wool original produced by Byron McCoy. Theme music provided by Cemeteries. For more programs like this, visit audiowool.co.